People. Purpose. Potential. And prosperity. It's time to go beyond business with Sean Nicholas.
So on today's show, we have Tim Canolan, CEO and founder of TLC for Kids. Now, Tim is also a recent award winner, being a member of the Order of Australia, which is a fantastic accomplishment. Well done.
Thank you.
And Tim has also in the past been Australian Local Hero of the Year, a Social Entrepreneur of the Year, and won many awards for his work in the not-for-profit sector. He has been CEO and founder of TLC for Kids and CEO for the past 20 years, which is fantastic. And we're really pleased to have Tim on the show. Tim, thank you for being on the show. And tell the audience what TLC for Kids does.
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Sean. Absolutely love the idea of the series and what you're going to be bringing in people. So hats off to you and well done. And thank you. It's an honour to be here. So thank you very much. So TLC for Kids, it's a children's charity. We provide support, which is emotional, practical and immediate relief for sick kids and their families while they're doing it tough in hospital. We currently work with 405 hospitals across Australia, 5 hospitals in New Zealand, and our services are used about 850,000 times a year to make children's time better while they're in hospital. And that's from anywhere from paying for medical expenses, food or fuel, accommodation, transport, all the way up to unfortunately helping out with funerals sometimes, or it might be as simple as distracting a child during a procedure or an examination. So the idea is to try and create a normal sense for the family, even if for a couple of minutes, to provide that distraction so they actually feel like, well, it's not a hospital, it's not a scary place, it's just, we're gonna get through this, and if we can inject a little bit of fun into that experience, the memory of that for that child and family is always better, and that's our focus.
Fantastic. And where did the idea for TLC germinate from? Where did it come from?
Well, I was actually doing motivational work years and years ago. So I'm like a cat. So we have many, many lives. And through the motivational work, I was invited to a camp that was working with my brother, and this camp was working with cancer kids. That was the first time I'd ever worked with anyone that was sick. Yeah. And we were teaching goal setting, positive thinking, doing dream collages, meditation. This is back in 1992, 93. And the kids loved it. And I got so much out of that, thinking, well, you know, we're teaching people how to stay positive, but they wanted more. And they were, you know, asking all these great questions. So I felt a little bit guilty, thinking, well, I'm really enjoying helping people feel better. And from the camp working with the kids, flash forward a few years later, one of the kids that I was working with was transferred to the Children's Hospital in Melbourne. Yeah. This is back in 1998. And I did some more work with him, and I found out through that work that all these kids were missing out in the hospital. And I wanted to fix that and change it. So started and formed TLC for Kids. So it was charitable work before that. And then I started it as a charity, which is a board of directors, set of rules, governing bodies. And I thought, well, I'm happy to do that because I need the organisation to be bigger than just a few kids. And the concept was to actually encourage other charities to just do a little bit more, open up their doors and help kids, not have kids on waiting lists. Yep. And about 18 months after we started, other charities were referring kids to us. So it became an accidental charity that was needed and became part of healthcare in the country. And now, here we are today. It's 8.5 million times we've put smiles on kids' faces. So it's very daunting, but very rewarding. I just love it. I've got the best job. Hashtag best job, whatever that is.
I love it. I see the rewarding thing, but I'm quite interested because often people don't understand the daunting side of a business, and your not-for-profit or your charity is a business, but they don't understand the daunting side of this journey. Where do you see it daunting for you?
It's interesting because the first decision to make it into a charity meant that I was answerable to a board of directors. And I thought, well, every day I have to perform. And if they think I'm not performing, well, I'm happy to put myself out there. So it's a shift in, I suppose, your with your confidence and what you want to do, to realize, well, if you're running your own business, you are your own boss.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in a charitable organization, the board of directors is your boss.
Mm,
so, okay. Which is what keeps you on your toes.
Yep.
But also it's a great way to reflect back on what you have been doing and, I suppose, keep yourself quite grounded. They've been a great resource also for the daunting times, because there is a lot of stress that happens in the nonprofit sector. For the first 2 years, for example, I funded the organization. I was a professional DJ by trade. Yes, in another life. But that helped fund the organization. But that was also quite stressful to know that, well, all the money was just going into this and we're just helping families and kids. So there wasn't any return.
Yeah.
And we had to keep the lights on at home and the food in their bellies and clothes on our back while we were trying to build this organization. We got to a stage where we actually sold our house to keep the organization going.
Wow.
But we were happy to make that sacrifice because we knew good things were coming, but we also realized that no one else was helping these families. So it was... Again, as daunting as it was, so Anna, my partner, so I met her at the Children's Hospital, but we both made a decision, thought, no, we're together, we're on the on the journey. Yes, it's a tough path, but we saw the light at the end of the tunnel. We think, well, just, if you just hang in there, things will change. Not should or hope, we knew they would change. We had no idea how and how long it was going to take. But that took a lot of strength, and I think
a lot of strength
because we were together.
Yeah,
that made it a lot easier.
Okay,
because it was that single focus.
So yeah,
I think to deal with daunting situations, it's very important to have a support base around you. If it's not a group of people, at least have one person you can talk to. And if you are by yourself, there are many organisations and groups for counselling and some feedback. But it's very important for people not to think they're an island, and to get through it, you need people.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And many business owners and entrepreneurs go through that phase where the optimism, and they know what they're doing is good, either in business or in social enterprise, but to push through, and you mentioned then those key people and support around you. And I've heard that from many entrepreneurs, and that was a telling point for you to have that support around you.
Oh, very much so. Because it's actually twofold, because number one, having that support base to know that, well, if I've got problems and need to talk to someone about it, I've got a great group there. But the flip side of that was for me thinking, well, I want people to enjoy this journey, be part of it, invest your time into it, because I know it's good, but it can be great if you've got more people, and it became a movement. So I thought, well, I sort of use that. I'm a silver lining kind of guy, so no matter what happens, I go, no, there's a reason for that. There's a lesson in there. Sometimes it's sort of, it can seem as a disadvantage, but I always thought, no, you keep on going because there will be good in what you do.
Yeah.
So I don't think you could look at yourself as potentially either failing at something or not being strong enough, because if you can look at it in a way that if you can talk to someone, bounce some ideas off, then you might be able to give some insight to that person as well. So it's not always a one-way conversation, and it's really important for people to know, especially starting businesses, don't be alone.
Yes.
Put yourself out there. There are so many networking groups now, and obviously some might be better than others.
Yep.
But the bottom line is, it's a networking group of people. People have this wonderful opportunity and ability to communicate with each other.
Yep.
So take advantage of human nature and reach out to people, and don't be alone, because no one is alone. Yep. No one's ever alone.
Excellent. And in that journey, you had people around you, but did you take on specific mentors or coaches, or did you have someone that had experience that you could sort of go to?
Early days, I saw a couple of key motivational speakers that I was following their journey and looking at how they were doing things. I attended quite a number of motivational seminars and workshops, and something that really stood out for me, and again, I did a lot of work with my brother, so we had 15 different jobs altogether, from promotional work. We were doing work with Streets Ice Cream, so we launched Homer Hudson Ice Cream in Australia. From CUB, Village Cinemas, to had a promotion team of 30 people at one stage, to gym instructing, to gymware, all these different things. But then when we started doing the motivational work, and we went to a couple of these seminars, and one in particular, loved a lot of the work that they were teaching.
Yeah.
And it was, unfortunately, became a situation where it was do as I say, not as I do.
Mm.
And that was a big I suppose, a step back for me to think, okay, so these people are preaching amazing things, but then as soon as they're off the stage, they're out there and they're saying, you know, look after your body and don't drink and don't smoke and be right. And then you see them after it, they're getting literally, you know, drunk, having their smokes. I'm thinking, it's a bit contradictory. It's like, well, don't, if you're up on the stage, say, you can enjoy these things, but don't tell people not to do it, and then you do it. So that was the lesson that I learned. I took the things that were great about what they were teaching and thought, well, I'll live the way that I'm explaining how people can live instead of a do as I say, not as I do.
And was that a conscious decision or is that an upbringing decision?
I think with mum and dad, always taught us respect from the youngest age. So it was, and respect your elders. So I remember going to dinner parties with mum and dad when I was 4 or 5 years old. And we weren't running around the restaurant being crazy kids. Like, at home, we were crazy kids. But they always taught us, no, you respect everyone. So part of that upbringing was always do the right thing and just do the right thing. So not lying, not being deceitful, they're not very hard things to do because it's a choice to do the wrong thing. And through my upbringing, that's when I realised, well, if I'm doing motivational work, we just do the right thing. Don't trick people. And I've always believed if you can go home and you brush your teeth and you look yourself in the mirror, no matter what you've done during that day, you should always be able to say, well, good job today. If you've done something wrong by someone, you really need to be able to look yourself in the mirror, but truly see yourself in the mirror and think, is that good? Was it the right thing to do to trick someone? And I always use like the grandmother or Neil Mitchell standards. So if you go home and you can talk to your gran about what you've done, would she say, hey, gee, I'm so proud of you? Or would it be, I'm so embarrassed? And then on the flip side, if you went to Neil Mitchell and say, I just did this today, what do you think? If you'd say this is fantastic, or this is, say, let's get you on air because this is this is not good.
So could you stand in Neil Mitchell grilling?
Yes, absolutely. Which, you know, you've got a heart of gold, but we also know the other side. So I think I use those sort of, and that's still today. Even, you know, there's 26 years now in the non-profit sector, still use those metrics today to measure what I'm doing on a daily basis.
Fantastic. And has there been, was there any times during that journey where there have been tough decisions that you've had to make that may have sacrificed your own personal well-being or livelihood and say, no, this is the right thing to do?
Yeah, very much so. And they weren't easy decisions, but I didn't waver from them. And it was something that, I suppose, when you're halfway into it, I didn't look for a, well, let's do the easy way out. It was quite funny, even when we, well, after we sold our house and we couldn't raise money, so we got to a stage where we had $94 left in the bank. They were difficult times. I've always had the habit of paying everything in advance. So the phone bill, the rent, everything we did, we had a post office box. I said, that's all paid up at least 2 months in advance. So if something was to happen, it gave me a 2 month window to work out how to fix it. You couldn't really do much with $94. So, and that's again where Neil Mitchell came in, and they literally saved the charity. But the decisions, probably the two hardest decisions, were just before we had this appeal on 3AW, where I was offered my old job back with the DJing work, and I had to make a decision pretty much that afternoon to say yes, but that meant that I couldn't do TLC for kids. And Anna, her position at the Children's Hospital after she left, had come back up again. Same day, we honestly looked around for cameras. We thought, someone is setting us up here because this will give us financial security, look after all Anna's daughters and my stepdaughter, and we'd be fine, but we couldn't do the charity work. Or we put our faith in people, so we'll just, thanks but no thanks. So, tough decision, but it's a decision we don't regret in any way. But it was quite, again, I'm lucky because it was, we were together to make those two phone calls to say, thanks but no thanks, these kids are missing out. And if we don't do it, if we don't stand up for them, we haven't seen anyone else that will yet. So
where does that drive come from? What is that drive? Because that's something that if people can tap in, I know it's a passion. But where is it just seeing that there is so much need for what you're doing out there? Can you explain where the drive comes from?
I think it's a bit of a perpetual positivity. which you have to see the best in everyone, and you also have to look for other ways to solve things. I've always loved mazes and complicated things, and
get into business, run a charity.
This should be fun. And I love basically taking things apart, like completely taking them apart, and work out how they work. So I remember Mum has shared this story many times. I think it was like 18 months or 2 years old, and she found me in the lounge room and I'd taken apart our VCR. Didn't break it, somehow worked out, got all the screws off. So the whole thing was laid out in the lounge. I didn't know how to put it back together, but I wanted to see.
Fascinated.
Put these things in, where does it go?
What do the hamsters look like inside the VCR?
That's right. Where are the people behind the TV? Yeah. But I've always looked at that. So don't always think this is the only path you can go down.
Yeah.
If there are alternative ways to go down there, we'll work it out. And that's that's always been a drive for me to not take everything at face value.
Yeah.
And always believe, well, not saying I've got answers, more answers than anyone, but there might be a different, not necessarily better, but a different way to do everything.
Yeah.
And it's not reinventing the wheel, but obviously there are different shape wheels.
Yeah.
So I've always sort of had that drive, I think, again, from the youngest age. I think, well, just work out things happen and then work out the best path for me, which would be the most... It's not necessarily the path of least resistance, but it's a different path.
Yeah.
And sort of just, you just do it.
And then do you sort of see if that path is heading you in the right direction and you go past the shadows and see the light again? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And when you get there, because I think... You literally get maybe halfway through it. Well, you know, you can get through it.
Mm.
If it gets too hard, well, you've got the option to stop.
Yep.
Or stay true to your integrity. Mm. And if your focus is right, you just keep going.
Mm.
And it's I've done a couple of marathons, and not that I enjoyed the running part, but I do remember one. I did the Run Melbourne.
Yep.
And because it was two loops, so I got to the halfway point and I saw all these people finishing, because a lot of other people were running halfway. And I thought, oh, they're finishing, and oh, I've got to do the same amount of distance again. I thought, just keep going. Just don't let that affect you. Mm. Just, well, they're finished, I can finish this. So it was this drive through. So I think, and that was quite a good example for myself to think, well, how I get through things, because you get to a halfway point and you got the option. You can stop and then probably going to have some regrets, or just keep going, and the worst you can do is have a crack.
Yeah, and see how far you get. And before you know it, you're back at the finish line and go, oh wow, I did it.
That absolutely. And you actually start looking back and no, that's, you know, you've just finished something.
Yeah.
Which is huge. And then that adrenaline and that euphoria that you get for achieving something is amazing. And I always believe it's important to also I suppose reward yourself and appreciate and celebrate the little wins.
Mm.
Don't have the master goal that you have to get to. Mm. So, well, you got up today. You know, I drive to work, I look at the building, but how good is this? Every single day, how lucky we are to have this job, how lucky we are to be living in this country, how lucky we are to be alive in this time. Every single day I say that.
Gratitude.
Mm. Gratitude's huge. It's not too common. It's easy to sort of talk to people about it, but once they get it, if you have true gratitude, when you live it, it makes everything bright. It adds colour to absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I want to touch on this balance of optimism, because sometimes people can have optimism and it drives them, it's sort of like blinded optimism. Yeah, so they're going, no, it'll be all right, but they see reality. Everyone else can see is falling around behind them. How do you balance that optimism with reality?
It's, if anything, it's not even a knife edge for me, because I've always had the ability to look long term, helicopter views as well, and then right down to the macro. It's quite funny, when I saw The Matrix,
yes,
I thought, oh, that's my life. I get it now. Thank you. Because I, for some reason, I've been able to see the whole picture in one spot. So having the optimism, for me, it's not so much blind optimism, because I know it will be positive. There will always be some lesson to learn, but always be grounded. And I was been working on this for a little while, because you look at your past,
yes,
you go to your left, your future is to your right, but you are always grounded. No matter where you are, no matter who you are always grounded. You cannot remove yourself from that timeline.
Yeah.
So having the optimism, well, if you look too far forward, you fall over.
Yes.
Or if you look too far back, you fall over.
Yeah.
So you always have to have this, it's like a spinning top.
Yeah.
You're always in a flux, you're always in movement, but as long as you keep on moving, and if you're working towards your, you know, an optimistic outcome, well, have a look at where you are first. And if you see the ground falling around you, so we'll work out where you have to go next. But don't think, I'm just going to look there and that's all I have to do.
Okay.
And again, I was taught that with riding a motorbike. So you have to see, you know, it's at least 500 metres ahead.
Yeah.
But you also have to know, well, your feet are touching the pedals.
Mm.
So if you get blinded by just looking up there and not seeing the pothole right in front of you, you're going to fail. So it's this real, it's a juggling act.
It's a great analogy. It's a great analogy, having the long view, but having the here and now sense.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And seeing and filtering things as they're coming at you, and then learning from the potholes you've gone over in the past.
Yeah. And isn't it amazing, though, that your body and your brain has the ability to take in thousands of stimuli at one time to work out, well, there's a tree over there, there's the road, the white line, picket fence, there's a cow over there, you're on a motorbike, you've got fuel in there, this could explode, but that's okay, it's not.
Yeah.
And you're taking this all in nanoseconds.
Yeah.
And I think when you start realising, well, your brain's going to look after you, you know, and you don't have to be aware of absolutely everything, it's just important things.
Mm.
And that's what I suppose, you know, I live life now. It's just, but I haven't used the motorbike analogy before, but I love that now. Thanks, Sean.
It's your analogy. Tim's analogy, the motorbike, like life. I have to reread Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance again.
Very good.
I love that philosophy, and I can see that's in you. Is this groundedness, or this ability to stay grounded, is it something you've always had, as well as the long view optimism? Like, is it something you've balanced? Like pre-TLC for kids, you're in this entrepreneurial life, which can be hectic.
Yep.
Did you have that then, or have you developed it and grown?
I think it's grown. I've always had an element of it.
Yep.
Always been very interested in I suppose, meditation and being still and breathing, you know, and really concentrating and listening to your breath. So I've always been fascinated with that from the youngest age. But I think as you fine-tune your skills, it's working out, well, how do you switch it on, and when do you need it more?
Yeah.
And when do you need to just back off a little bit and just we'll go for a ride?
Yeah.
You know, let things go. And sometimes that's actually probably the hardest thing, to think, well, things are set in motion.
Yeah.
Occasionally you just have to say, well, just watch for a
minute. I have no control over that yet.
Yeah.
I just have to let it play out.
And that's something I'm still learning.
Yeah.
But every now and then, it's sort of not being a control freak, which I have struggled with, especially, you know, even with staff wise, and you know, want to get in there because I want to help people, I want to educate, I want to share the knowledge that I've got. No, Tim, that they have to learn.
Mm.
Show them once, they do it. They can yell out if they need your help. But that's what I'm learning at the moment. You're always learning.
Yeah.
I think we're always children, no matter what we do.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that I've really... I've got to the stage where I know how to be calm and grounded all the time, but also working out how to actually step back a little bit and enjoy the ride.
Yes.
So that's...
Yeah. Because it's something many people, business owners and entrepreneurs, get swallowed in, and they're so hands-on, and they're trying to hold on to everything, that then that stress and anxiety, this passion that they're driving, is causing them stress and anxiety.
Yeah. Or they have the eyes on, well, you know what, I'll rest when I retire. That's why I really enjoy life. So, and that's, I don't know how old that saying is, but when you start living it, you think, wow, you shouldn't work. You shouldn't work not to work when you're old or frail or spent. And it's really important to grab onto the things that, something in your job or your life that you really enjoy.
Yeah.
Or take some time every now and then, just really be in that moment and just enjoy that.
Yeah.
That re-energizes you so much. But yeah, you're spot on with people, especially entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs as well. it becomes this flurry of activity. You get caught up in the moment, but you're not seeing, well, long term, I can't sustain this.
Yeah.
You get burnout,
yes.
A lot of stress and a lot of anxiety, which is really sad.
Yeah.
That the level of stress that people now, and mental well-being, and you know, stress is causing illness,
yep.
But it's unnecessary. And I think if people can just sort of just be calmer, you can see the trees for the forest.
So Tim, how have you shaped that running an organisation like TLC for Kids? You know, keeping a charity afloat, keeping it prosperous, keeping it delivering its services, and also expanding and growing. Is there some practical ways or things, insight that you can give of how you've shaped that so that you still love doing the stuff to fulfill the purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I taught myself how to juggle.
Yeah, excellent.
Years ago, and I keep on looking at everything we're doing and said, well, this is just juggling.
Yes.
It's purely just juggling. I don't juggle chainsaws by choice, of course. You know, I probably could learn. But I always look at that thinking, well, when you are juggling, you know, you'll have your favourite ball.
Yeah.
So with the balance that comes in with what's going on and making sure that things are prosperous, so it's trying to allocate time to each division, each pillar, whatever you want to call them. And just the other day, which was beautiful, because the part that I do miss of the work is a bit more of the interaction with the families. Mm. I know what we're doing, but it's very rare now to get the opportunity to actually deliver something. And just so happened, timing-wise, and I had to go to the hospital with our coordinator and drop off a request. And then the nurse said, they're here today. Why don't you guys come up and see them? So it was a hands-on delivery. And I thought, this is like day one of what we did. And it was a really nice thing to come back to, because as I was saying, I know we do this every day, but for me to experience that again, it was a shot in the arm. It was almost like an adrenaline shot. I think, wow, this is 20 years on, this is having the exact same effect on families and why it started. And it comes back to that why.
Yeah.
And then looking at the areas, like the finance side. Well, I would do a little mantra. So we've got a great direct marketing team. So we've got 40,000 donors that give. So I went on the helping out with reconciling the accounts. We've got a bookkeeper, but I still get in there. But I look at the account lines, and each time I reconcile, I go, thank you. Thank you. Oh, that's really nice. Thanks so much. And I say out loud, thinking, well, we appreciate every dollar.
Yeah.
It comes back to gratitude again.
Yeah.
So I look for little tricks that I can do for myself to keep things going. That's just gratitude after gratitude.
Yeah.
Not trying to get too bogged down in the detail of things. Mm. And if there's something a bit sticky, I also like the challenge to, well, how can I help fix this?
Mm.
Or if I can't do it, let's get a professional in or someone that knows a lot more about it and let's fix it so it all flows.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the key things that we've always said, it has to be organic, but it has to flow. And one analogy that I've used quite a number of times is I just feel like we're the salmon swimming upstream, and all we're doing is dodging bears. And that's, I think, any entrepreneur's journey is that you have to get up that hill. For some reason, you are swimming against the current, but you can see the bears. Just make sure that, you know, you're flexible enough to dodge them, and don't run blindly, because if you go in a straight line, you're not going to get past it.
Yeah, so and it gets back to understanding where you are in the ground here and now, and not being sucked in by the blind optimism and...
Yes.
And drive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I see the passion in you when you talk about that connection with the delivery of your service. Now as the charity expands and you have some tricks in terms of looking at the books and seeing and saying thank you, how do you see yourself staying connected with that delivery as your role expands and you sort of move probably away from the hands front line? How do you see your journey in that, to keep that connection, to keep that passion, which comes through when you talk about it?
I think it's a tether, and I like it as a mental tether. So from day one, from Francis being, you know, I'll say patient zero, but the first kid, so I've got a tether to him. So no matter what I'm doing, I've always got that connection. And so with the services now, I know with an opportunity probably the next 18 months to 24 months will be in the UK, which means travel, which means meeting new hospitals.
Yes.
So to go to the other side of the world, I've still got that tether coming back to, well, why are we doing this? So I never want to be disconnected from it. And something that's really resonated with me, Anna mentioned this to about one of the people she was working with a long time ago. And he said, I'd never see kids. If it wasn't for you, I'd never see kids. And this guy had a senior role looking after in one of the hospitals we work with.
Yeah.
And that floored me to think, well, you know, he's got no connection with why they're raising the money, but he didn't see it. But he also knew, so, well, it's out of his hands. He couldn't physically do it. So when I heard that, I thought, I have to make sure that I'm not in that position, because it's always about the families. And the only reason why we're here is because of the service.
Yeah.
So by having this imaginary tether means that, well, and I stay connected with the team. I always keep on, you know, we have our chats, we have our discussions about how things are going. And I say, what are the highlights? What's been the greatest request this week? Or what's been a challenging request this week? So I think no matter how big the organisation gets and how far I have to travel, we've always got communication, either verbally, via email or in person. And having that tether and link is probably the critical part. So we'll never lose sight of why we're doing it. And I know there's quite a few studies, and there's a lot of lecturers and conferences and examples of, well, you know your why, that's why you're doing it.
Yeah.
But I think that...
But staying connected to it.
Yeah.
Staying connected to it.
That, and I haven't come across too many books that teach you how do you stay connected. The one thing I've, you know, personally for me is a tether, because it's a lifeline.
It's a lot there. You stay there. So tell us how you do it practically. Is it an imaginary thing? Is it a visualization thing?
How do you
stay tethered to Francis and that first patient?
I've got his photo in my office.
Okay.
So it's actually my nod to him every morning.
Yeah.
And I think about him every day, but not in a sad way. It's a grateful, I don't know, it's quite a, you know, I'm not a religious guy, but it's like, it's a blessing.
Yeah.
Well, I had to meet him.
To start the journey.
To start the journey, and this is where we're at. And I've also got I'm very lucky, but I've got quite a few visual and physical triggers that happen. So each day I come to the office, and our first office was literally half the size of the office I'm in now, as in the space. And now we've got a floor in a building, and it's a daily reminder, I think, where we came from and where we are. So I suppose I'm quite fortunate, because I've got these things that are physical reminders that tether me back to.
It's a great concept, because sometimes even in that entrepreneurial business success, you get so far away from the original purpose and cause that generated your passion that it can get lost.
Yeah.
And it can get corporatized, and it can, and all of a sudden you're 20 years down the track, and you're going, "What's this beast I've created?" Rather than this is still my passion coming through. So
totally agree.
It's a great lesson.
Yeah,
it's a great lesson.
And they're not. I suppose in essence, it's not hard to do, but you just have to think sometimes. And if I was told this earlier, I probably would have done it earlier. So I like this sort of, especially this sort of forum, because people get to hear little tips and techniques on. Well, how did you get through it? Or what do you do?
Yeah.
But find little things, find little icons or tokens or something that you can have with you that's a physical reminder of where it started and why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And those, that they are so powerful to have, because it's an instantaneous memory of something good. Or if it was tragedy that started a cause or a business that you wanted to have a solution for something, have something that reminds you of that. So you can have it either in your pocket, on your desk, in your car, wherever it is. But I think it's important. And as you're saying, the bigger organisations get, because the further away you are from, physically further away from where you started, but it's very easy to have something that's got emotional memory.
Yes.
As we all know, a smell can trigger a memory when you're 7 years old. How that sits in your brain, I have no idea.
But it all sits in there, so use it.
Yeah. So we're lucky. It's not like it's not something that's not solvable. And it's not something that only some people can do, because everybody can do it. It's just, you know what to do.
Yep. So the next challenge in a growing organisation is, how do you get that through the people in the organisation?
Again, through conversation. communication, keep everyone on the same page. And I always like the part where it's a 360 degree sort of interview or update with everyone, because I love the fact that I'm answerable to a board, and I like the team that are all answerable to each other, because we all have to have each other's backs, but we all have to be there as a united front for the kids and families. So for the growth side, we always make sure, well, you're doing things that you enjoy doing. And if you need to have a reminder of why we're doing what we do, well, let's talk about it. Always have an open door policy. But the communication is probably the key part about all the growth, to make sure we don't have any sticky bits that we've missed out on or haven't identified something that's a problem. Because if it's out of sight, out of mind, and again, that's from past history. When my brother and I had our gymwear label, there was a manufacturing company that just burnt us so badly, but out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, oh, there's your big fat bill. Oh, by the way, your business is going under. Here's your gigantic debt. But what just happened?
Yeah.
But now it's keeping, you know, both hands on a wheel.
Yep.
And making sure
that... And having a view of an oversight of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And that helps with the growth.
Yeah.
Which is the next stage. Yeah.
So do you keep the tether that you've got with Francis, your first patient that you helped out? Do people come into the organisation? Do you work with them to find out why they want to join the organisation, why they're passionate about it?
Yeah, very much.
And do you keep? Do you train them or focus on them reminding themselves of that all the time?
Yeah, we do, because you follow your heart. That's, if you've got passion in your heart and passion in your soul, that's life.
Mm.
It's not your paycheck. It's not who dies with the most toys or the biggest house or the most number, although that there was one guy that buried himself with his Rolls Royce.
Still.
But yeah, it's important that people follow the passion and stay connected to it and don't lose sight of it. So I always share the France story with everyone because it's really important for me. And when people say, well, where do you get your energy from?
So,
well, because it's such a strong tether.
Yeah.
And anybody can do it. And this isn't because I'm lucky I can handle situations where if there's been a loss of a child for a family, I've just got that strength to do it. I'm not saying everybody can do that, but everyone's got the ability to have that passion, the fire in your belly.
The drive.
Something.
But in modern corporations and organisations, we're seeing so much disengagement, so much mental illness and stress in the workplace. What can organisations and businesses learn from what we've talked about in terms of keeping their people engaged from your point of view?
I think it's looking at what's driving the team. And bring it back to the why they're doing what they're doing, instead of get the numbers across the line, get some sales, I don't care how you do it. It needs to be humanized.
Yeah,
I think that's probably the key thing. Mental illness is rife, which unfortunately there's a lot of labels being given to people. Oh, I'm stressed, so I must have mental illness. So, well, it could be stress. So we don't want to blow things up, but it's important that people have that confidence that they can talk to someone about it and realise, well, all right, I'm a bit stressed because there's not much petrol in the car today, so it's really stressful. But you have to think, and what I've loved, there's a great example where people say, well, it's not so much people are doing it worse than you should go and see people in the hospital. It said people are dealing with worse situations than you. And it's very, that those two things, it's they're actually chalk and cheese, where people need to see someone in distress to realise, well, I've got it pretty good. You need to realise how they deal with the stress that they are dealing with, and that puts it into perspective. And I've found that quite difficult, I suppose, to get a bit of an audience and do that as part of the education. This is something I'm really pushing out. I want people to understand you don't need to go to Cambodia to understand that, well, people are living, you know, out of toilets, basically.
Yeah.
They're dealing with it. There's stressful things you can do. Work out what you can do, but you don't have to go and see something to believe it's actually happening. Mm. And I think social media is it could be a tool for greatness, but it's also been a tool that has disconnected everyone so badly with depression, with anxiety, with the stress, because they're living lives that, you know, it's a smile on the camera. As soon as it's off,
Yeah, definitely.
They're in a dark room, and it's I find that quite sad. That actually hurts my heart.
Yeah.
I don't know how to fix it, and this is one of those things that will. I focus my energy on the things that I can fix.
Yes.
But it's not dismissing the things that I can't.
Yeah.
And it's that real. That's probably a challenge. That's probably something that I.
But in your role and with TLC, you're dealing with stressful situations all the time, families in stress. What sort of practices do you and your team put in place to, one, deal with having to handle it yourself, but also dealing with people in those stressful situations?
Again, talking with the team. We debrief a lot. We talk to the hospital staff as well. If there's a really tricky situation, we might either get the hospital staff in. We've got opportunities to talk to different groups as well, but we've found we've got a really good mechanism internally to make sure if someone's struggling, the team are around them.
Yep.
And again, with the board and our advisory board, we've got a wealth of beautiful people, great hearts, intelligence, and resources that we can tap into to think, well, I'm struggling a bit today, what can I do? So let's go for a walk.
Yep.
Let's have a chat. Let's look back at what we've been doing.
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation many times with different board members to say they could never come to the hospital or never deal with a funeral of a child.
Yeah.
I said, absolutely. No one's asking you to do that. But you look at the silver lining, what a beautiful opportunity and beautiful memory we've created for that family in their time of need.
Yeah.
And that's the thing you look at.
Yeah.
So it's...
And as a board member, you are playing a role in this, this bigger picture.
Yeah, very much so. And that's where I think it's almost... goes against the normal rule of, you know, as we're saying, look forward, know where you are. But sometimes if it's a really difficult situation, it's okay every now and then to have a bit of laser focus on one point.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at one point, which would be, it might be a smile that you give to a mother and hold their hand just for a couple of seconds, you just look at that moment, and that you don't have to worry about everything else going on, just that moment, and that can get you through.
Yeah.
But don't get lost in it. And this is that. Again, it's that, it's the balance, you know. It's like the awkward handshakes.
Yeah.
If it's too long, well, you cross the line. If it's too short, it's not really there. So it's a learning. We're always, I suppose, being human beings, we've got different chemical makeups, different personalities. But it's just finding that little balance. And no one gets it right. No one gets it right the first time. No one gets it right the 100th time. But you just have a go. But just know that whatever you're doing is the right thing.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. And it comes back to what you said earlier in when you were starting out this journey, is that having the people around you, that connection of humanness and being human, and not getting lost in the business or the numbers or the cause or whatever it is actually having that human connection.
Yeah, because the numbers side, that's the mechanics.
Yeah.
So it's like a car.
Yeah.
You don't need to know how many times a spark plug, you know, ignites the fuel. No. You don't need to know how many turns of the wheel nut to hold that wheel on, or the makeup of rubber. It just happens. So I always look, well, again, being aware of it, you look at the human side first, and then everything else can grow.
Which is connection. I think that's a good lesson people can take away. Look at the human side first. I love it. So, Tim, as we wrap up this session, because I could talk to you for hours, and we'll probably come back and do more sessions, tell us how people watching this can get involved with TLC for Kids. In what ways can they get involved with TLC for Kids?
We've made it in as easy as possible for people to come in at different levels. So it might be advocacy, which probably one of the strongest points of any support for any organisation is talking about it. And that might not be putting your hand in your pocket. That might be saying, hey, I've come across this great organisation, look them up. You might not be able to help, but you might know somebody who might be able to help, or you might have a service that they use that you might be able to either provide a discount or provide that service to them. We have created a number of events and campaigns so people can attend events, which obviously helps us as well, helps raise the awareness and the funding. We've got a great program with Ambulance Victoria, which is a TLC ambulance. So if people want to fund some of the requests we're doing for these kids, which is a last ride, or it might be a workplace giving scenario where your employees and your staff can nominate $1 a week or $1 a year and make small contributions. But it's important for people
like, it's great. The more support we get for our cause means, well, basically it's the number of kids we help is limited by the amount of funding we receive.
Yeah.
But my encouragement's always been, find a cause. If it's not TLC, that's, you know, we're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. But find a cause that you're happy with and just do something. Bryce Courtney, you know, very sad, very terrible that he's missed, and he was a great writer, but his book, The Power of One, a waterfall starts with a single drop of water. And when you get that concept in your head, thinking like a drop from an islet can be as big as Niagara Falls, it's mind-blowing, but think, just has to start. Has to start somewhere. So take that first step in looking after the community, looking after yourselves, but find a cause, because the causes need the help. And they're there, they should be there for a reason. And if there's a reason, because people are needing help or there's a problem, just get behind them. But if they want to talk to us and make us the first point of giving back to the world, well, we welcome it with open arms.
Excellent, and a worthy cause it is.
Thank you, Sean.
Tim Canola, thank you for being on the show.
You are a good man. Thank you, Sean. Thanks so much.
Thanks for watching. Make sure you like, comment, share, and review. And be sure to subscribe to Beyond Business with Sean Nicholas.